Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and I'm here today with Dr. Herb Slavin. And on the agenda for today is a discussion about how medicine currently practiced has such a significant impact on your health and well-being. And Dr. Slavin has some very, very interesting research to share with our listeners. Hi, Dr. Slavin.
Hi, Janet. Over the years in clinical practice, you come across people that get cancer. And when you observe those patients, because we don't treat cancer in our office, at least we don't treat them in a mainstream medical design. Patients desire, they go to an oncologist or a surgeon or the radiation oncologist. We focus more on trying to prevent cancer by making sure that people's nutritional status is okay, that they're not under excess stress, that they're not being exposed to extraneous toxic substances from the environment. All these things help lower the risk of developing cancer. But when you do get cancer, that's always a dilemma for patients, because now they're afraid for their life, and they basically let the cancer doctors, and I say that to include all the various types of specialties that address cancer, do what they want. Now, let me just say one thing, Janet, before you cut in. Patrick Quillen, I remember going to a seminar many years ago, and he was with Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and he wrote a book, and you can find his book on Amazon. But he lectured, and we were talking about the best approaches to cancer, and he said that the best outcomes come with surgery.
Very, very interesting.
You know, cancer and radiation really didn't add much to the outcomes.
It's interesting that he didn't say surgery with nutrition support, because his focus was a nutritionist.
But I think he was referring to studies that had been done,
okay,
not his own observations. Now, clearly,
okay,
well, I think we know one thing. We can say the healthiest people don't get sick. What are the healthiest people? How do we define health, by the way?
Very, very, very interesting, because unfortunately many Americans feel that it is being without a diagnosis, not necessarily that true overall picture of good health.
So, okay, so what I can say is the healthiest people are the ones, number one, that eat the better diets, low in sugar, organic, staying away from most of the processed foods. So that plays a major role. Then you want people that exercise regularly. You want people that have less stress in their lives, because stress is a major factor.
Jumping in right here, I'm going to say the people who supplement their diet with scarce nutrients that are poor in quantity in our typically healthy diets.
And those scarce nutrients are minerals for the most part.
For the most part. And the other biggie is the substances that accumulate in our bodies over a lifetime that prevent your metabolism from taking in and properly utilizing nutrient minerals.
And this is what we talk about on the radio show. We talk about it with patients in the office. Janet, when you see clients, you've stressed the same thing.
Absolutely.
It's even been stated that if you don't buy organic, the nutrient levels in the foods you're eating are not there. They've been depleted because they don't replace it in the soil.
It's so sad, because mainstream media tends to want to downplay the importance of organic fruits, vegetables, organically raised livestock, saying, oh, we don't necessarily know that the nutrient levels are higher. What we do know for sure is the contaminant levels are lower.
with organic food.
For sure.
So anyway, there was a article that was published in a journal, Clinical Oncology, and it was trying to answer the question, what is the benefit of chemotherapy when treating cancer patients? And there was one, you know, again, you know, it's almost like reading a legal document. You ever try and read lawyer writing? You know, they're writing in a, even though it's English, they're writing in a different language.
A lingo.
And it's the same thing with, you know, these studies when they write them. So it comes a little tricky. So
it's very, very interesting because when you read a research study like that, they give you a synopsis at the beginning called the abstract. And it talks about who conducted the study, what the parameters of the study were. But the truth of the matter is sometimes when you read the abstract and don't plow through all of the lingo in the whole study, you come away with very much an incomplete idea of what the study point was.
Now, this study was done in Australia, and the reason for the study, they wanted to see if their money was being well spent on chemotherapy, because they probably have a socialized medicine there. So the government's paying for it, and they want to see, are they spending the money wisely? So they stated here that the 5-year survival, the relative 5-year survival rate for cancer in Australia is now over 60%. So that's good. All right, 60% of people with cancer living over 5 years. Now you look at the contribution that curative or adjuvant chemotherapy plays in that 5-year survival in adults, and it was estimated to be about 2.3% in Australia and 2.1% in the USA.
Okay, so those numbers are critically important to maybe repeat or rephrase. The contribution of chemotherapy creating a 5-year survival rate in cancer patients was 2.3% in Australia and 1.2% in the United States.
Now, this is not to say that chemotherapy is never warranted, but, and so I'm going to just list the couple of types of cancers that seem to have some benefit from chemotherapy. Hodgkin's disease has a 40.3% 5-year survivor due to chemotherapy. So that's helpful. The other big one is testicular cancer, but that's about it. The next down the line, testicular cancer was 37.7%. Then you have non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, drops to 10%. But let's look at the most common cancers. Lung cancer being the most common cancer, 2% benefit from chemo.
Now, is that not an astonishing number? How is it that pulmonary oncologists actually get their patients to agree to undergo chemotherapy?
Because they're not sharing this information. Let's look at breast cancer. Breast cancer, 1.4% benefit from chemo. And prostate cancer, which we like to talk about, has no benefit from chemo. So that, in fact, I don't know that they use chemotherapy with prostate cancer. They use the hormonal manipulations, but not chemotherapy.
And boy, would it be very interesting to see the so-called beneficial effect of the type of hormone manipulation that they use in prostate cancer.
Yeah, so they couldn't even give you any numbers like that. So I think this is a real eye-opener, but in my personal observation with patients, just in recent years, I've seen patients diagnosed with cancer, go for chemo, and 2 years later, they die. They don't last. And this was sort of back up what the study formally showed. That's why the emphasis in our practice here is to try and keep people from getting cancer, because when you get cancer, it's really tough decisions that have to be made. It'd be much better to not get it.
So the important things would be identifying toxic accumulations in patients. And there are certain toxic accumulations that are very specifically associated with the development of different types of cancer. After evaluating that toxic accumulation, the next approach would be to evaluate the nutrient levels of certain critically important nutrients. And the one that comes to mind is selenium, very, very important for an overall support of your immune function. Then I'm thinking of zinc and the zinc-copper ratio being important. And with regard to breast and prostate cancer, vitamin D.
So this is where your emphasis has to be. Unfortunately, if you go to the mainstream doctors, and we see those patients all the time until they come over to us. Now, we don't want you to leave your doctor necessarily. We want you to encourage your doctor to order more lab tests to really find out what's wrong with your health, if there is any, by measuring inflammatory markers, very important, your metabolic status, extremely important. Those are the factors that play a role. So, you know, you can come here, get a second opinion, and then go back to your doctor, because your health is ultimately your responsibility. The doctor can prescribe drugs, but if you want to become healthy, you need to take the steps with improving your diet, exercise, stress reduction, those types of things.
It's very interesting, Dr. Slavin, because very frequently I speak with people, and one of the first things that they share with me would be that they eat a very health-supporting diet. And then we talk a little bit more. Do they drink enough water? Is the water that they choose a high-quality water? Do they get enough rest? Do they have stress management techniques? Do they have all of those individual aspects of good health in place? And very frequently, they will share an opinion they have that they are a healthy individual. But what you really need to do is understand the specific tests that are available that evaluate on a cellular level how well you're doing.
Now, I want to go to a specific type of cancer, but okay. It all depends on the your definition, and that's DCIS. I know that's a topic that we've talked about before, and I know Janet has her own opinions on it. Let me read the definition from the Journal of the National Cancer Institute. They say that ductal carcinoma in situ, that's DCIS, is a condition of abnormal, non-cancerous cells found in the milk ducts, which have not spread to nearby tissues. It is often referred to as a precancer condition, according to allopathic medicine. That's not the way I see it being treated. It's being treated as cancer.
It's very much being treated as cancer here in the United States. In other countries, that definition is more readily acknowledged. Here, it is treated extremely aggressively as though it were cancer, not precancer. And this is where advanced medical testing comes in, evaluating a variety of health parameters that allow you to make informed decisions about how to proceed.
Well, these will be some interesting information here. They say because of the push for mammograms, DCIS in the United States has risen from 1.87 per 100,000 to 32.5 in 2004.
Okay, now that is, the mammograms are identifying these precancerous states more significantly. Explain that, Dr. Slavin.
Well, that's a good question. So let's look at it this way. DCIS was rarely found and diagnosed before the 1980s, but with the increased poking and prodding in the breast area that comes with a typical mammogram procedure, the incidence of DCIS has now come to represent 25% of all diagnosed breast cancers. Statistically,
wow,
the risk of dying from DCIS only within 5 years is a mere 0.7%. That means 99.3% of the people with DCIS live. But if you keep poking and prodding
and radiating and compressing.
But you make an interesting point. Are we finding more DCIS because we're doing more mammograms, or are we creating more DCIS because we're doing more mammograms?
And my answer to you, Dr. Slavin, is yes. In both situations, I think that an affirmative answer. Yes, we're finding more, but it would be very interesting to evaluate the age category at which these DCIS findings are determined, because if say a woman starts to have annual mammograms as recommended now, and I believe it's 45 or 50 that they're recommending annual mammograms, and possibly if it's age 60 that you start to see a significant rise in the DCIS activity, then we can connect the exposure on an annual basis, let's say over 10 to 15 years, with ultimately the development of DCIS in 60-year-old women. That statistic, finding out where the age category falls with regard to DCIS diagnoses, that'd be a really interesting bit of information.
Well, that has been backed up by many other studies. There's one I like to share with patients who've had thermography in our office, and I go over it thoroughly with them. And I always bring up this article that was an editorial after the New England Journal of Medicine printed the report or the study, which wanted to answer the question if whether after 30 years of doing screening mammography in the United States, has it saved lives? Because that's what you would think, because that's what women think. I'm going to get my yearly mammogram, and they're going to catch it early, and I'm going to be saved. Well,
excuse me, Dr. Slavin, you said something very important for women to understand. They're going to catch it early. You're going to have developed cancer. Yes, indeed, it's early stage, so-called, according to those people marketing that test mammograms. But the truth of the matter is that doesn't necessarily mean early stage.
Well, that was the thinking going into this study, is that if you catch, the idea with screening is if you catch the cancer early, you've got a better chance of saving lives. So in the editorial, they mentioned that over the years, there have been many studies looking at the same question. They've included over 600,000 women in total, half the women getting yearly mammograms and the other half getting no mammograms at all. And they followed these women for over 10 years, and these have been published studies, and they found that the death rate from breast cancer was the same in both groups.
Heartbreaking.
Which means if you have screening mammography and therefore getting radiation, chemo, surgery, it's all unnecessary, because the other group didn't have any of that, and the same number died from breast cancer. That means the treatments aren't making a difference. That should certainly make people want to take a different approach.
Well, the different approach would be understanding that truly mammography is not early detection. Yes, indeed, it's screening, but it isn't early detection. Do you want to talk about how thermography is dramatically earlier detection?
Well, thermography can detect cancer, but more importantly, it identifies women at risk of developing cancer maybe 10 years down the road. So you have time to make the corrections that might prevent the cancer from developing. So the question surrounding DCIS is, even though the condition itself is technically not cancer, Is it possible that all the treatment options administered aggravate and increase the risk of developing actual breast cancer? And the answer is a resounding yes.
Yes.
So the conventional treatments for DCIS are similar to those of breast cancer. They include radiation, lumpectomies, the use of tamoxifen, which is a common cancer hormone therapy drug. Understandably, women who have been diagnosed with DCIS are often puzzled and confused as to why they are being treated as if they have invasive breast cancer. Is this simply another example of the assembly line mentality that modern medicine promotes?
It's interesting because one of the individuals who spoke to me after being identified as having DCIS, she was told by her physician that it was an aggressive approach to her, that an aggressive approach was needed, that DCIS was not necessarily a precancerous condition, but had a very high potential to be invasive, which my understanding and all of my reading about DCIS is very, very different than that.
Well, here's what they say regarding DCIS and the treatments. You have, number one, you have exposure to radiation through mammograms and also radiation treatments. So here's what you can expect from that. Mammograms emit low-dose radiation, and repeated exposure increases breast cancer risk. The very treatment of radiation therapy that itself increases your risk of developing breast cancer. Another treatment called lumpectomy. And now that's a surgical procedure. It is estimated, or it is an established fact, that surgery breaches the natural barriers that encase a tumor, which enable cancer cells to escape and spread. The trauma of surgery stimulates tumor cell growth as well and reduces natural killer cell activity that is designed to destroy cancer cells.
Dr. Slavin, isn't the lumpectomy done typically after a needle biopsy? So you have a double exposure risk there.
Yes. Now the drug tamoxifen. It's classified as a carcinogen by both the World Health Organization and the American Cancer Society. Tamoxifen doubles, and in some cases quadruples, the risk of endometrial cancer within a five-year period, and has also been linked to increased risk of stomach cancer, colon cancer, blood clots, fatty liver, memory impairment, and low sex drive.
It's very, very interesting that the recommendation with regard to tamoxifen is a five-year treatment plan. And I don't know what your experience with it has been, Dr. Slavin, but people speaking to me who've been given tamoxifen, very often their doctors say to them at the five-year review mark, "We've done so well with the tamoxifen, let's just continue on it for another few years." Sounds nonsensical to me.
Well, I'll give you an example with a patient and the way the doctor handled a recurrence of breast cancer. They said, "All right, let's use these hormonal drugs to keep it suppressed." Of course, they don't know if it was working or not. But they said, "Well, as long as the cancer seems to be in remission, we'll just keep using the drug. And when it starts to show signs of growth, we'll switch to a different hormones." And that's their approach. It's really a whole guessing game as to the way they approach it. But back to DCIS, they say there are some respected breast cancer specialists, but they don't list them here. They don't name names. But their approach is regarding DCIS is to have a wait-and-see attitude. Active surveillance may prevent unnecessary treatment and emotional distress if a person has been diagnosed with DCIS, and also may, in the long run, save your life.
Save their lives. The thing is, with regard to a diagnosis of DCIS, Two nutrients that I'm going to focus on, vitamin D. We know that the higher your vitamin D levels, the lower your risk of malignant cells multiplying in breast tissue and in prostate tissue. The other nutrient that I'm talking about or thinking about is iodine. Once again, supporting your iodine levels, minimizing the cellular changes that lead to malignancies.
And speaking of iodine and vitamin D, the two most important things, you want to follow the patients with thermography, because remember, the reason you don't see DCIS on thermography is that there are no blood vessels feeding that tumor. That's why it's a cold tumor. It's not going to spread. Nothing's going to happen from it. They did that study once, looking at what happens to a cancer cell if you don't supply it with blood vessels and a way of absorbing nutrients. And the way they did it is they implanted a cancer cell on the eye of a rabbit, because the eye of a rabbit, you know, there's no blood supply to the cancer cell, and nothing happened. You know, that's the key. And this is what DCIS is. There is no blood supply to those cells, so it may just stay there and do nothing. So we mentioned that iodine is important. There are some cancer markers you can do, probably all be normal, you know, at this stage.
Okay. And so at advanced medical testing centers, you can do the tests that will identify not only the protective nutrient levels, but also the other markers that would evaluate your risk and give you a very clear picture of what the state of health is.
I think that, you know, that's what we're trying to empower the patient, because you have to live with your body 24/7. The doctor is only there, once every 3 months, 5 months, once a year maybe. So it's really your responsibility to take care of your body and prevent these things, but you can't do it, and you won't know what to do if you don't do the testing. And if you're trying to take good care of your body, you need the feedback from testing to make sure that your efforts are paying off. And you know, that's the message we try and get out to people.
So here on naturaldocradio.com, all of the information that you need to begin the understanding of your role in supporting your health and all of the means available to evaluate that health status. And you can find more information at naturaldocradio.com, and Advanced Medical Testing Centers is here to bring you that kind of testing information. Dr. Slavin, I think that we have covered the DCIS very well, so people understand that possibly they have been misguided as to the importance of immediate mainstream cancer treatment for that issue.
Well, most people think of cancer as a death sentence, and I think what these studies show is that the treatment themselves may be the death sentence.
That was crucially important information with regard to the Australian study on chemotherapy. And to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in to naturaldocradio.com. Visit us again soon for more updates on your health picture.